All right, Jennifer and Nick, take it away, please.
It was my first time attending a board of directors meeting for the ACB. And I'll share a very brief funny thing, which is they had some great assistance with staff in the hotel to find the rooms you were supposed to be in. And I had no idea what the layout would be. And when the person who was helping me find a seat, it turned out she sat me at the board of directors table. I'm not on the ACB board of directors. So I had no idea, though, that they had some structured layout. And probably about 20 minutes into the meeting, someone came and whispered that guests sat at the back. And so it was fine, but I got a chance to chat before the meeting with some members of the board. But it was really great to sit through, you know, an entire day, essentially, to really get a handle on what the board is actually doing, the real kind of nitty-gritty, how they communicate with one another, you know, even things like how they do Robert's Rules or things like that. I felt like I learned a lot, and it made me much more interested in being part of the national ACB, just because I just was pretty impressed by the people on the board, how much work they were all doing. I mean, it was crazy when you were hearing the multiple roles people play. And there was also an announcement that the current executive director of ACB, Eric Bridges, is leaving to take a new job at the American Foundation of the Blind. But what they did at this meeting was basically discussed who should take his place. And Dan Poole, who's the current president, is now going to be interim executive director. And the current first vice president is moving into president as an interim president. So just seeing how those details were handled was just really interesting, similar to how, you know, we might do things at Bay State, except we don't have an executive director. So that I really enjoyed that first opportunity. Nick, did you attend the rally?
I did attend the rally, and you know, also talk about that. I think I also mentioned that first day when they had the board of directors meeting. Just from a logistics standpoint, ACB National, they did a really nice job with the hybrid meeting, where they had a large table set up and they had multiple microphones placed about the table at kind of regular distances, that we were able to hear people who were calling in on Zoom very clearly. And they had one speaker who would kind of reiterate things said in the room back over to the people who were joining remotely. But it was a really nice kind of just audio situation set up. And Rick Morin was there helping that all out. So we all know him here in Bay State. He did a really nice job. I think I did go to the rally, and that took place on Friday, so the following day. And it was a small group, kind of. But I think what mattered the most is that the rally took place, right? Because it was leading up to it, the talk of the rally that prompted the ACB leadership to go meet with people at the Treasury and to see that accessible, tactile $10 bill. But the rally itself, you know, Dan Spoon was up there on the stage with some other speakers, and they talked, you know, about the initiatives, how it's far too long that we've existed in a developed nation without accessible currency when we're, you know, one of the very few. And, you know, people were, you know, cheering along. It seemed like kind of a small group, maybe 50 people. Everyone was in either very wet clothes or ponchos. It was raining. Then we kind of walked. They called it a march. It was kind of a leisurely stroll over to the Treasury, and then did some, you know, call and response kind of rally chanting. And it was kind of funny, a little lackluster of a chanting group. But again, it was the sentiment, right? It's difficult enough for people who are, you know, there's barriers to travel, economic barriers to make travel happen for people who are in the blindness community. And the amount of people who did show up and the enthusiasm that I saw was really inspiring. And I think the people at the Treasury probably saw that too, right? It's not about the quantity of people showing up, that it wasn't a packed rally. It was just the intention behind it that I found really inspiring. Back to you, Jennifer.
Yeah, I'll definitely second that experience of the rally. I had never really done that in that active a participant in a rally. And I just felt like, number one, I learned a lot just by hearing from Dan and Eric the representatives from a group called Women. What is it? Women on the 20, I think is what they were called. Because part of it is not just accessible currency, it's also inclusive currency. So part of this is Harriet Tubman coming on to the $20 bill. So this creates the opportunity, the legal requirement to have that bill become accessible, because that's been their excuse for so long that, well, we have these whatever printer things all set up and we can't change them. And well, now they're going to have to change them because they've done a great thing, I think, with, you know, putting a woman and a woman of color and who has had such a fantastic background in the work that she did. And so it was also a kind of a unified opportunity. It's not just about blindness. It's also about representation, inclusivity, and, you know, those really critical things. I had a poncho on. It was definitely raining, but that was fine. Like, I even felt more like, hey, look at us. Like, we're out here and it's raining and, you know, we're still here. And there were some interesting, like, we were not allowed to have chairs set out on the area we were doing the initial part of the rally. And that's actually against the ADA as far as the National Park Service goes. So there's going to be a follow-up with them on that issue. You know, for people who needed them to accommodate a disability that they might have had. Now, it turned out that there were benches all around the edge of that area. And so they also included in the weekend, it was a mixture of these kinds of more formal opportunities, but then they offered different tours that took advantage of what the DC area had to offer. They had one to the Mount Vernon estate and to all the national monuments. Well, not all of them, but I guess most of them. A couple others. The one that I did was the National Botanic Gardens. And I had no idea this existed. And I've lived, you know, 45 minutes from this place for much of my life. And so that was really a lot of fun. You know, we were indoors checking out all these plants, and they had a real commitment to kind of a multi-sensory tour. A few really well-informed docents and people employed by the Botanic Gardens. And I never realized how little I knew about what was out there that could be accessible. So there was talk, for example, at the Capitol building of a very large three-dimensional tactile map of the entire whatever's around, like the Capitol building, the Washington Monument, the Smithsonian buildings, the Vietnam Wall, like all of these things are on this map. And I didn't get to check that out. So that's on my list. The meeting people was great. I am I think I am not always, one of my goals for myself for the weekend was to put myself out there and get out of my comfort zone of just kind of hiding and not talking to people I don't know. And that's just, you know, it can be hard when you're blind. You don't know who's sitting next to you. I'm trying to connect with Nick and we're like texting. We're probably sitting next to each other, you know. So it was funny that way. But I just started like turning to people next to me. Oh, you know, Jennifer, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at one point, like I was sitting next to Deb Cook Lewis, who's essentially likely the next president of ACB. And I was like, oh, my gosh, like, who's this person at the table? I mean, I didn't say that, but I definitely got more comfortable that, oh, yeah, this is really good. I feel much better. Like, I don't feel as isolated and I feel more involved and a part of things and getting to know members on a more national scale. They also did a really nice option, which was a what they called a Dyna round. And they had 8 different international themed restaurants and they had made reservations for 8 people at each restaurant. And you just, you know, if you had registered for it, you would say, okay, I'd like to go to the Mexican restaurant or the Thai or whatever it was. And you didn't really know who you'd be eating with unless you had planned to go to the same place. So that was, you know, for someone like, I'm like, I don't know who to ask to go to dinner. Like, I was like, oh, well, that's an easy way to do it. I'll just say, yeah, Mexican. And it was a great dinner. And it turned out to be Dan Poole and his wife were there. And I talked a lot with his wife while we were waiting for the Uber. And we had some fun Uber dramas to get there and back. And just wonderful to meet people that I wouldn't have met without, again, quote, taking that chance of just throwing myself into it. And I had a good blackberry margarita as part of it, too. So, yeah, so that was a nice piece of it as well. They also had some great speakers. I don't know, Nick, do you want to talk about some of the Saturday, Sunday morning presentations that you attended?
Sure, sure. Yeah. I'll also say that the networking was really positive. A lot of opportunities. I spoke with a lot of different people there. And it was a great networking. And I thought that the whole way the event was organized was just very accessible, inviting. The hotel was beautiful. But some of these sessions that they held, so what we would do is we would come down early in the morning and there was one room where most people would, you know, meet and they'd do a little morning introduction. One person would walk around with a microphone and you would say your name. So everyone knew kind of who was engaged for the day. I thought that was really neat. And then they had 2 separate rooms. So they'd always have 2 different topics going at one time. And people could choose to go to one or the other. And then there would be a little half hour break. And then 2 more concurrent topics would begin. People would go to one or the other. One that I went to on day one was the NASA one with the, you know, all these images from Hubble. And James Webb Telescope and what NASA's doing with the alt text to make these images accessible to people with visual impairments. It's kind of a unique thing, I think. But what they did is they put tactile representations of these images on tables so everyone had one in front of them. And then there was this one very humble fellow up at the front of the room who kept describing himself as an unconventional teacher. But he really did an excellent job, and his job was to kind of articulate what was going on in these tactile representations of the images captured by the various telescopes. And they also had an astronomer there with him, and she would handle some of the more technical questions or dive deeper into a certain area of thought around what a galaxy does when it collides with another galaxy, or why are certain galaxies more dense than others. It was really cool that they really brought that to life. One thing that I took away from that is that they're actually thinking about or will be implementing an even longer version of alt text for the images that they're using for these space telescope pictures. And there's a few different types of alt text right now. You know, if you're using a screen reader and you're on the web and you're pressing G and you come to an image, it's going to read something to you. And what we're typically used to hearing is something short, like maybe woman with long brown hair wearing glasses. But with the NASA pictures, now what we're hearing is these longer, almost paragraph-length alt text for images. But even that doesn't quite capture what's happening in these pictures. You know, you hear like a picture's worth 1,000 words, well, a paragraph only contains 40 words. They're going to link to an extended alt text page. And these extended alt text for images will be pages that are broken down with headings, lists, paragraphs, tables. So we can begin to parse the beauty of the image out into a structured page that any screen reader user can navigate to learn more about it. So I found that really neat. Another one that I attended was, The Future of ACB. What they talked about in there a lot was about membership. And, you know, in my role with BSCB as the treasurer, I'm quite engaged in the membership process of, you know, sending out blasts to people to say, you know, it's time to pay your dues, let's be members again, and I'm managing the membership database along with our membership committee. So I'm motivated to make that a smoother process, but I know that's a goal for BSCB this year. So I shared a little bit with them about my perspective as a younger member of ACB and BSCB, kind of what keeps me engaged, what I think would keep other young members engaged, and also the value that all members have in the ACB, BSCB family, regardless of the age. I think it's just a beautiful coming together of people. And so we need to find the value in it for both our older, younger, and middle-age members. So that was when I went. And Jen, I know there were a couple that I missed the following day that were also about BSCB culture and the role of volunteers. Do you happen to attend those?
Yeah, I did the ACB culture, and that was very about membership. I mean, that's what it turned into, because the culture, it was what does ACB culture mean to you, I think was the title of it. And so people had the opportunity to, you know, share either their experiences, what they've gotten out of ACB, but a lot of it was that feeling of connection, a place to belong. The advocacy piece was a big one. And so it was a nice preface to the membership discussion, because the membership came after the culture. And they talked a lot about just the fact that it tends to be that a lot of work is done by a few people. And so this question, not only within membership, but how does the organization, both on a national and a state level, get more people involved, empower more people to participate, so that there are more people involved in the work, but even just in the organization. Someone said that 19 out of 20 people who are low vision or blind are not involved in any consumer blindness organization, which to me, I was like, wow, 19 out of 20. It just seemed like a very high number. And it's kind of what I think I've heard Kim mention with the library and the commission as well. It's like, where are those people that haven't gotten involved? What have been the barriers to, do they even know that these organizations exist? How do we find them? How do we kind of not sell them, but just that, those pieces of things. That was a really big discussion point as well, of the culture piece, when people were talking about how important ACB and their state affiliates and other affiliates have been to them. The National Park Service was also there. They did a presentation Sunday morning. Well, the first thing they did was they actually had a representative from the National Park Service who gave out the access passes. They used to be called Golden Access. Now it's some other name. But basically, if you are over, forget the age number, or you have a disability, you qualify for free admission to any national park, national monument, et cetera. So it was great just to go up to the table. Here's my name. And they handed me the card. So, and you can get these when you go to any national park. But it was nice that they presented that opportunity. But the National Park Service talked a lot about, you know, when you're going to a park, don't, if you want to have more hands-on, more involvement, more information, that's a lot of what the staff are there for, that they have people trained in giving interpretive tours, in making things more accessible, say being able to give very detailed verbal descriptions. Now, I doubt it's across the board, but you know, one of their big points was, don't forget to ask about this. If you can do it before you're going to show up, all the better. But I know, you know, myself in group tours that other people have arranged, I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is so much better than just like showing up and hoping I find things that are useful. And so that's something that I'm going to keep in my mind for planning trips is, you know, that's a lot of what they're there for. They're being trained much, much better and trying to have a much better emphasis on inclusivity in what they're doing.
They also had a something called the mobile voting project there.
Oh, yes.
Members could go try out accessible mobile voting. And they actually voted on some of the legislative objectives of ACB to see what was most important to members. You know, it was a mock kind of vote, so I don't remember the results. But I think people did find that it was an accessible process. And this mobile voting, mobile accessible voting, I know BSCB has been very involved in, you know, voting initiatives. And, you know, I really see this mobile voting as the future of elections in the U.S. and Massachusetts. So it was a really cool thing to have as just almost a side topic where between scheduled talks where we had NASA or the parks or BSCB membership or the role of members and volunteers in ACB, right? There was just an opportunity to do this activity where we could vote. And I think just thinking of that, how they structured it and making sure people always had an opportunity to be engaged in a various topic would be something very cool that we could implement in our BSCB conventions and conferences. Just thinking about, it's not just one event that we invite people to, but it's a variety of events happening concurrently. So that there's something for everyone who's present.
Yeah, and I agree. And that mobile voting project, what they're looking at are using, like on your iPhone, using that. And I think it's similar to what the voting organization that, you know, was working with us on the state level. They are talking about having like a tablet available at voting sites that you can use for access to voting as opposed to the big machines that are there now. So this, they were there as a quote vendor, but they were recruiting people to just try out, give them feedback on the app. I didn't do it, so I can't speak specifically to it. But yeah, I think having those alternatives, it was nice. And it also broke up the size of the group a bit. And did someone have a question?
In the queue. Go ahead, Jeanette. So two things, just for clarification. The director is Dan Spoon, S-P-O-O-N-E. And for those of you who have seen the daily schedule for ACB, he is the husband of the person, Leslie Spoon, who does a lot of the exercise things. And I'm curious, Jennifer, because when we went 3 years ago, we went during COVID, and we did arrange tours. Did you find that when you got directions from people on these tours, like, were they just telling people which way to go? Did you have volunteers that you could follow so that everyone could hear the directions? Because I know the group is larger than our little two or three person group that we had.
So I did not go on the big tours. One I had registered, the one I had thought about going to on Sunday was already full when I registered. I just wanted to kind of be on site. But I did the botanical garden one. The group was small enough and they had, I guess, three people who worked for the gardens who were, they kind of spread them out, beginning, middle, end of the group. But then they divided us up based on interest. So a group of us went to the orchids and another group wanted the medicinal plants and that sort of thing. So I found that it was fine, like the ability to navigate. But it was also a very self-contained space with pretty obvious kind of walking paths within the sort of greenhouses that they had. You have to have a tremendous amount of patience.
Yeah.
The bus was, what, an hour or more late for the garden tour, Nick? And, you know, it was frustrating to be sitting there, but it was also an opportunity, you know, to do email, but also to like meet people. There was a guy who was super funny and, you know, he was really pitching in a lot and, you know, we were talking about stuff, but then getting on the bus, you know, it feels like you're in a herd. And again, you just have to. It could have become a very negative experience if people were complaining and, you know, grumbling. And it just, what I appreciated is for the most part, people were just go along with the flow. Like, it's not going to be ideal. These things are going to be the way they are. I felt it was fine. I mean, that patience was really a key. I did get a little, not turned around, but at the rally, I was sitting on a bench and what they did was Dan would say, okay, if you want to walk to the treasury, go to, you know, he was very specific about what side of the stage. But I didn't realize that they had already started walking. So I was kind of waiting to move and, you know, I couldn't see anything, but it was great because one of the ACB volunteers or staff came up and said, did you want to go to the rally? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And she's like, oh, well, let's get up there, you know? And so that was perfect. Like, I felt like, oh, good. Like, people are looking around. Now, if I was just sitting on the bench, I don't think she would have come over. But the fact that I was trying to follow their voices and trail down the sidewalk and things like that. And then it turned out she had to go back, but there was a guy for some, it might have been Voice Over America or Voice on America, I can't remember who she said, but he was wanted to record and ask me questions. And I was like, oh, thank goodness I was listening to what Dan said and Eric said, because I like felt like I knew the answers pretty much. And he's like, wow, you know a lot about this. And I just said, yeah, I was listening to the presentation. But you know, that was fun. We were walking together, we were laughing. You know, he got me caught up with the group. And then, you know, Dan's like, all right, the bus is going to be over here and pick us up. And then 5 minutes later, oh, we're going to cross the street. The bus is going to be over there. You know, it just, you had to be flexible, understand that these things are so hard to pull off with so many people, so many different, you know, vision conditions, mobility experiences, or skills, and just it's you can't predict, you know, how much assistance is going to be needed. You know, is the bus going to get caught in traffic, things like that. So that's what I found was the most important. Dan did mention, Dan and Leslie at dinner said that the difficult thing with one of the tours they were on was because it had started a little late and they had a very firm end time, they were sort of rushed along, like, here's the tactile map. And they had like 5 minutes. And then, okay, now we're moving along to this. Like, they wanted them to be able to experience each aspect of the tour. But it ended up, I mean, Dan's reflection on it was, I'm coming back. Like, I'm going to spend an hour with this map. So,
right. We did the Smithsonian, and I would say go there.
Yes, I agree, Jeanette. That's a great place. Do we have any other people that want to unmute and say who they are and have a question?
Hi, this is Don Carr. We had David had his hand raised for a while. So,
what, David, just unmute.
Okay. Jennifer, did I understand correctly? You said Dan Spoon had been appointed interim executive director. Is that right?
That is true.
Yeah, as of the day that Eric leaves his position.
What happened was, apparently, David, from what I heard the explanation, a couple of staff people were considered, but they had so much on their plate. And it took me a bit by surprise, because I knew Dan wasn't running for president again, but I didn't think he would have taken it on. Obviously, they'll do a national search, and they're thinking a few months anyway. So I believe it's the 21st that Dan will take over. And then, as Jennifer and Nick were saying, Deb Cook Lewis goes up to president and Ray to first vice. And they'll leave that be until election time in July.
So, yeah, so you said there'll be a search process.
Yes.
I don't want to sound too legalistic. That's a staff position. Is he getting paid to do that?
Yes, he will.
He is, actually, at the dinner.
Yeah.
And said,
yes, he will.
Said, Leslie's happy that I have my first paid job in 8 years.
And the other thing is, David,
I don't want to sound like a stick in the mud. That doesn't strike me as entirely above board, that board members would sort of elect themselves to paid positions. Doesn't sound entirely
right to me. So they had, and I'm not sure the specifics of what happened, because it was a closed session, but they called it an executive session.
Yes.
Basically, where, like, Dan had to leave the room. Like, this was the board having a meeting, and that's where the discussion on what the options could be and what the individuals in that session decided was they wanted to, before they said, here's what we're going to do, kind of like, David, how you can appoint somebody to fill in a vacant position until the next election. Before that decision was made, they wanted to present to everybody in the room and on Zoom the thinking that what they had been thinking through. So exactly what Sharon was saying is what they shared with us. And so it's not an election. It's we need somebody to fill the space. He's an interim executive director. And by having him do it, it's also, he knows that role. So part of it too was, for the kind of quote good of the organization, let's get somebody in for the short term who can continue the role and knows the role until they've done a thorough enough search.
And this is that he was in retirement anyway. I don't think he was looking to necessarily take on a position for money.
No, they were looking for somebody who had both the knowledge of ACB and of its members, and somebody with good enough management skills to be able to operate in the interim. And my understanding is that they have given him a maximum time frame, and that it was something that he had to agree to, you know, based on how they go with a search.
Right, right.
Could I ask one other quick question on a different issue?
Sure, of course.
Nick, you had mentioned the mobile voting. Was that Democracy Live who was there? If you remember the company, it's the company we've been dealing with in Massachusetts.
I believe it's actually just
called the Mobile Voting Project, and there was a company name, but I hadn't remembered or recognized it. I know there's a few that are doing these types of projects. I have another one that I'm working with through the Carroll Center. So there's a couple of them out there, and I'm engaged with at least two of them. But it wasn't a name I had recognized.
You know, the machines are very old, the Automarks. So this is precipitating what will happen with people who want to go to the polls, and a lot of people do. So are you seeming to indicate that this would be the replacement for those old machines potentially?
They're typically, you'd use them on your smartphone or through a web app on your computer. So it can be done anywhere. It's not just about accessible voting. It is about the mobile aspects. So think military personnel who are stationed overseas. We want to make sure they can participate in their local elections home.
That's Democracy Live.
Okay. Well, that may be one of them, but there's multiple projects who are trying to pursue this.
The question that I would have, of course, we have people that don't have smartphones, and when you use the Automark, you used a regular, you know, phone keypad.
So Sharon, some of the ones that we have seen, and he's right, there are multiple ones out there, and I've done some of the additional testing, but the ones that I've seen that we're not allowed to talk about, but they are being tested, are not based on your iPhone.
Oh, great. That's perfect.
And there is definitely, of the companies that we've been exposed to, they are aware that there is a huge portion of the population that could not use smartphone technology.
Good. I'm glad.
So, that's not being left in the dust.
Good. Anybody else have any questions? I'm just so thrilled that Nick and Jennifer got to go on our behalf and to represent us, and that it was a good experience. Yes? Somebody else?
This is Jane.
Yes. Hi, Jane.
Hi, how are you? I joined in late, but I got the gist of it.
Uh-huh.
First, I'd like a quick comment, then I have a question. First of all, I'd like to thank both Jennifer and Nick for going and representing Bay State and their participation. And you are right that the people do a lot, because I'm involved with four other different special interest affiliates. So I've seen the work that some of the directors do on other committees. And I hope other people will get involved. And the community calls are great. But my question to you is, both of you, how did you find the transportation and getting around in D.C.? Did you have to use the Uber? Did they provide the bus?
Did provide the bus. That was the main way to get back and forth from the rally, from the various tours, that sort of thing. For the a dine around, we did Uber, which was fine. We just learned that sometimes the promise of fitting six people, the driver might not have six seats actually installed. There were issues like we see around here with dog refusals. One of the blanking on her name, but the primary speakers, she got delayed at the hotel. She had two guide dog refusals in a row and made it there just in time and sang, you know, the R-E-S-P-E-C-T song. Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
And Colby Garrison. Yep. And so we didn't, I mean, I flew into Baltimore. I went in a day early so I could stop at my parents' house. And then I took an Uber from there down to the hotel. But that's something I'm used to doing. It was totally fine. I did not have my dog with me. She was having some stomach upset, we'll call it. And I didn't want to introduce that to the airplane and the hotel and the conference. So she stayed home. So I didn't experience any refusals. They did use Uber and Lyft. Actually, the hotel was really good about, I think they ended up calling a taxi, actually, for Colby. And Same with, there were a few people who preferred a taxi to get to the airport. National Airport, or Reagan National, I think it's called, wasn't that far from the hotel. So some people preferred that to get to the airport. Sorry, the airport from the hotel. So yeah, the bus was the main thing. If you wanted to leave early, then you were responsible for getting yourself back. And you were also responsible for, they gave you the number of one of the organizers and basically said, please, please text her, call her if you're leaving early, because they would do a head count on the bus to make sure they weren't leaving people behind.
They use the paratransit bus or a regular Vic commercial?
No, no, it's like a Greyhound kind of bus. Okay.
Because yep, I know
every city was full.
To the rally, and that was one thing that I put out there, because I used to belong to another organization, and we had transportation all the time using the big city buses or the Washington Flyer. And
yeah,
we even did it outside in Virginia one year. So I was just curious what they did.
I mean, I met a couple people attending who, you like, went out on one of the trolleys that apparently ran right outside the hotel. It was almost like a tour, but it was a public method of transportation. I just kind of have a rule for myself that if I'm only going to use this thing once, like the metro to get to DC, I just find it much less stressful to get on that bus or take an Uber, or, you know.
Did you find any problems with the transportation?
I found that the bus sometimes that ACB had booked was a little delayed, at least for the Botanical Gardens one. And then also when we were trying to get over to the rally, they were, you know, people, part of ACB were booking Ubers to get people over there. I did like that it wasn't, you know, delegated to any kind of sighted volunteers to do that, but people using VoiceOver, using their smartphones, were booking those on behalf of multiple members trying to get places. I'm an impatient person. So oftentimes if I had to wait even like 10 minutes, I just booked my own Uber and just kind of went on my way.
Did you do that for the gardens? Did you leave me behind and book an Uber to get there?
After we waited an hour and a half for the gardens, I went upstairs and did email for the gardens.
Okay, now I feel better.
The gardens, okay.
Great. Well, thank you, Jane.
Okay.
Anybody else before we move on to the next topic of the night?
This is Mary.
Yes, Mary.
Okay. So I just wanted to thank Nick and Jennifer for, you know, providing such a wonderful presentation. The two of you really sort of piggybacked off of each other so well. Yeah. And gave a really great sort of complete picture of the you know, weekend, long weekend, and it almost made me wish I had been there. this sounds great, and hopefully, you know, some of what you maybe learned in some of the you know, the presentations are things you might be able to introduce to BSCB, you know, if you think it would be helpful. I know, Nick, you mentioned the membership. So,
yeah, Nick and I were also talking about the James Webb, all that information he talked about, that could be a great conference convention session.
Yeah,
especially if one of them would get on the Zoom with us or send us some material, whatever.
So, my understanding is I think they're really open to it too. At least I've heard, I think, a couple of the women from the space, the Institute, speak in other sessions. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Russ are in the queue.
But thank you again, both of you.
Great. Russ, thank you.
Yeah. I was wondering about that National Park Pass. Would that include also a guide? You know, if I had a guide with me?
Oh, good question. I don't know.
Okay. I can find out. Thank you.
Yeah. Is there a way to, find the information online for that pass?
Like to order one, do you mean?
Okay. Yeah, to order one online.
I don't know that either. I didn't check.
Can I speak to that?
Yeah, please.
I have one. And I use it, and you can go online, or you can go to the National Seashore down on Cape Cod and get it. if that's the closest park that's available. And yes, you can take someone, because I went to Florida it went into Wiggins Pass Park with my mother in the car. And they took my pass, and she didn't have to pay for it.
Oh, so that's great.
That was many great years ago. You should double check on it. But I'm almost positive that they will, if you have like three or four people in a car, if you go into a state park, like a beach park or something like that, that they'll probably have to pay like half price. But it's very reasonable, and it's something everybody should do.
I wonder, yeah, Russ, if you went online and put in National Park Accessibility Pass.
Yeah. I was looking at it right now, actually.
And once you have it, you have it forever. You have to renew it.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. I'd like to move on just for a minute, and because we in the Central Mass chapter had quite an experience this week of talking to an aide of Congressman McGovern about the legislative imperatives, and there may be other people on this call who have had experience this week too. I don't know, but I wonder, Mary, if you could give us a little summary. And I don't know if Nona's there. I think she did. Did I hear her leave?
Yes, yeah, she had to leave. She took another phone call.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So, yes.
But Sharon?
Yes.
Oh, this is just Nick. I'm just going to sign off. I have a terrible headache, but thank you very much for having me.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much.
Say goodbye.
Stay night at board meeting. Okay.
Take care, Nick.
Bye-bye, Nick.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Okay.
Okay. So, we met with the representative from the Northampton office of Congressman McGovern, and that was easily set up by one of our members out in Western Mass, Myra Ross. So we met with his the district representative, and we had a chance, and we met almost 45 to 50 minutes. He never rushed us. And there were probably about seven or eight of us from the chapter on the call, including Myra. And two of us took each imperative. One spoke about the imperative. The other spoke about, you know, providing that personal story to really, you know, emphasize the need for the imperative. So we got to speak about all four of the imperatives. And then, you know, let Kobe, who was the representative, ask any questions. And he did. He asked questions. He wanted to know if there were specific bill numbers. He also wanted to be informed when there were bill numbers and any of the imperatives introduced in this Congress, so that he could really follow up. But he gave us the impression that certainly at least the imperative that has been introduced, the medical devices imperative, that the congressman would certainly sign on to. And as soon as they had a chance to study the others, he would most likely do as well, you know, provided they're, you know, introduced. So, but we have seemed to have really good communication with him. So it's good to have that line of communication with you know, James McGovern's office. So yeah, it was a good meeting.
Nah, and as they've said over and over at ACV and anywhere, you know, telling individual stories about how lack of accessibility affects your life is really important. And I remember last year we had the same imperatives, and we had some other people in our chapter who spoke at that meeting and did very well as well. So I don't know if there's anybody else who got to do it this week. What I've heard is that some people haven't heard back when they're trying to, you know, get in touch with their legislative offices. Did anybody else have any other experience? Just unmute and speak.
Russell in the queue?
Yeah. Go ahead, Russ.
Sure. I did call on the legislative imperatives with both my legislators, and I was just able to leave them a message on the phone. Didn't ask for return confirmation, so I haven't heard anything.
Good for you. And so you explained what they were? Is that how?
I just gave them the numbers, the bill numbers.
Oh, those were probably the state. Were those the state imperatives or the national imperatives?
State imperatives.
Oh, the state. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. We were talking about the national imperatives with McGovern. But yeah, there have been state imperatives, certainly with the remote access voting and the Regional Transit Authority.
Right.
Yeah.
Enhancement. Right. Yes. And the remote access did pass, Russell. So it's been extended with the remote access to public meetings.
Right. And hopefully permanently.
And the RTA enhancement funding, well, we won't know that until probably the summertime or by June when the House and the Senate have to hash it out and then the governor. But those would say, but we were talking about like the national imperatives. So
remember hopefully, we did that last year, the exercise and the medical devices accessibility. Yes. That's what we were doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope that people will have a chance to maybe meet with their U.S. reps, or if we can, hopefully, I know we've been trying to reach out to Senator Markey and Elizabeth Warren's office. And of course, Senator Markey is one of the sponsors, at least last year, of the, well, the senator sponsor of the Communication, Video, and Technology Accessibility Act. So hopefully it'll be, he'll reintroduce it again this year.
Nona, I see you've been able to come back in. We were just saying what happened in our group the other day. And I just, Mary gave a summary, and I just wondered if you wanted to put anything in.
I mentioned
Myra for sure.
Yes. Oh, good. Yeah. No, I was just very pleasantly surprised as this was the first time I had done something like this. And, Kobe, the legislative aide that we dealt with, was just very personable and just really patient with us and didn't rush us out the door and or the Zoom. The Zoom door. And so it made our first timers very comfortable doing this. And I've sent out my email to Senator Markey's office looking for, a meeting time. So keeping my fingers crossed that will happen. So.
And we'll do it all over again, right?
Yeah, we'll do it all over again. Okay. Yeah. Right. And we can actually maybe expand the number, maybe different people, because obviously our senators are our entire state. So not a particular district. So, yeah.
And Senator Markey is such a champion for.
Yes.
For our issues. So.
I did find out, I contacted and spoke with Swatha at ACB National, and it looks like the website and software application accessibility act possibly could be sponsored, or there will be a bill number come this summer. But the other two, no timeline.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeanette in the queue.
Go ahead, Jeanette.
Do you happen to know if public law requires with Zoom communication thing that chairpersons be in person at the meeting?
Oh, we're talking about the remote.
Remote
meeting. It's absolutely no, Jeanette.
Good.
It is saying
you just made my day.
Right? No. You have every right to say, nope, we are virtual and I can be virtual and I am, you are protected under this, the extension of the remote municipal meeting law.
And the reason I ask that, for anybody who would think that's a little weird, is because in some constitutions of groups that are considered needing to be followed the open meeting law guidelines, it states right in them that if you are a chairperson, you have to be in person. And that changed when we all went to Zoom.
Exactly.
But they tried to cite our Commission on Disability in Quincy because I wasn't going in person.
Yeah.
To
right.
The meeting place.
Right.
Right.
Wow. This emergency provision that happened during the start of the pandemic, which ultimately is what has been extended for the next 2 years, gives you that ability, Jeanette, to do, continue doing Zoom
You know,
I mean, you just made my day.
are you facilitating it, Jeanette? Are you the chair?
Of that one, yes.
Of that one, yes, right. So that would be a major inconvenience to you to have to go in person.
Well, the real point of the matter is I could do it.
Yeah, sure, you could.
But if I don't have to,
absolutely,
I'm not trudging.
Absolutely, especially
I don't. Yeah.
In the winter, like, come on. I mean, there's been so much better attendance at the MCB stuff and everywhere. And not just in the blindness community. Like, I belong to an online, it's called Worcester Institute for Senior Education. And we have members that have left Worcester, but, you know, who live in Florida, who join our courses and pay money. So...
Absolutely.
I actually need to go, but if okay. you get stuck with
if
this
stuck,
and someone can't
call,
help you.
Right? Yeah.
Yes,
are
it's fine.
Are you going to be on as another Zoom?
I am, yeah. but you yeah. can call me.
All right. Well, thank you. Okay. Okay.
Bye, Jeanette.
Oh, bye.
Nope. She's yeah. She's
gone. I think yep. the last thing that I would like to bring up is to ask for ideas about Third Thursday. In a couple of ways. First of all, are people, I'll say them out and then people can react however they want. Are people wanting them to continue every month? Second of all, would you like some months to have no topic at all, but just to be able to chat? Number three, do you like the format of having a host, or do you like an informal discussion, or sometimes one and sometimes another? And number four, ideas for new topics. So any of those.
Nona and nephew.
Go ahead.
I like the idea of no topic and just having people chat about, you know, whatever comes to mind, not, you know, all the time, just, you know, just every now and then. In terms of new ideas, I think if any of our members have taken on any interesting trips that they'd like to talk about, that would be great. I mean, I know that Cindy was, you know, took an amazing trip not that long ago, and that would be kind of cool to hear the whole travel experience. You know, something like that.
I'm taking notes because I'll put these out to people. I know Mary mentioned, you had mentioned the Ski for Life, and I'll talk to Cindy about that. I think she just went off the
call. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a really good idea too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm disappointed about All Out Adventures not responding, but you know, I could maybe try again too. Maybe.
Please do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please do.
And even DCR, because I would think they'd like to do outreach.
I know, and the woman at DCR definitely said, I'm the outreach coordinator, and I began to wonder, is that a defunct, like, nobody's in the position, but the number never got removed. I don't know.
Okay.
Someone else? Assistant Diana?
I just wanted to echo Nona and say that I also like the idea of having Third Thursdays every so often where there's no topic. I think it would be kind of a nice, like, reprieve, because we don't do a whole lot of, like, remote social gatherings. Right. And I think that for not every, like, you know, people might not be able to get to the in-person event that's happening after the convention or for whatever reason. So I think that it's a nice option to have some fellowship, you know, outside of that. And to speak to whether or not we should have them every month, I think that if we continue what we're doing now, if I recall correctly, we don't typically have them when we have our spring conference.
Correct.
We don't have it when when ACB has national convention.
Right.
And I don't think we have them in the fall month of the fall conference, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's just my opinion. Obviously, somebody else can feel free to disagree with me. But I think that the way that we have things in terms of, like, schedule-wise now works fine. But there's no hurt in taking a month off every so often or deviating from that.
Right, right. I kind of feel the same way. I think particularly because we're never going to probably be back in person in the way that we were. And we have such transportation barriers that having a place to chat once a month, I think, is a good idea.
Yes, I agree.
Anybody? Well, this it is
Jane in the queue.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda in the queue.
And who else?
Mary.
Oh, Jane. Okay. Jane?
Yes, I'd like to echo their sentiments about having a free flow discussion every once in a while, because I think it would get to know people better, like from different areas of the state. As like you said, the transportation issue is a problem. And, you know, I think that if we could just find, maybe just throw a question as a topic and get it starting, because some people don't like to make the icebreaker to make the first move.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
And I think maybe, you know, we need to have a little bit more socialization, but that because of the transportation, we all can't just get to Boston or wherever they're going to meet together. Or it might also, and the other thing is that we all lead busy schedules and we have a lot of meetings. Even me, who lives here on the Cape, I'm in a lot of things now. I've gotten back and I feel great. Is that it would be nice to take a hiatus every once in a while. So those are my thoughts.
Thank you. Mary.
Yeah, I was going to basically echo what people have said. Definitely, you know, a more casual, you know, free-flowing type third Thursday, something that we can that can be promoted, like, you know, coming to and, you know, sitting at the bar and chatting with friends kind of thing. You know, maybe you can think of something cute to promote that kind of third Thursday. But have, you know, a couple topics on in mind if you want to, like, try to, you know, get conversation flowing kind of thing, too, to have, you know, couple things that can always be questions that can be tossed out, like an icebreaker or something like that. You know, like your favorite. Oh, what have you read lately? Oh, great movie you saw, or a new app or gadget or something. You know, something like that, you know.
Or what's your favorite ice cream?
Oh. Food. Food. It's always about
people food. Love food.
And when we do have more formal sessions, though, and have a presenter, I think we should go with raised hands for questions, though, when we have speakers. I think that might help to control that better.
Right.
Okay. One thing amongst us, it's different. But when you have a speaker from the outside,
yes,
you know, it might be easier to have, you know, raised hands.
Right. I kind of feel the same way. I like the informality right now, but there are times, especially if it's something like when we had the blind shell speaker, I thought we might have a ton of people interested in the phone. We ended up not having all that many, but I thought it was good to have the host. You know, Jeanette is working with a couple of people, and we're going to probably do a kind of host practice session where there's no, where they don't feel, you know, any pressure to perform.
That
like
could be fun. That could be fun, Sharon.
Oh, yeah, exactly. We Jeanette and I talked about it yesterday, and we'll have maybe four or five people as the audience, you know, and let them practice raising hands, muting, lowering hands, you know. We'll make noise so they have to mute us.
I was going to say, being annoying.
We'll be annoying, you know, that kind of stuff. So I wanted to try it this way tonight because I think we need to be kind of flexible, and the communication committee really felt that we needed to, especially if we didn't have hosts, be prepared for that and know that we could function, you know. And I feel like everybody has been very, very respectful and, you know, hopefully has been able to say what they want to say.
Mm-hmm. Plus, we're a smaller group, too.
That's yeah. Different. Right.
This is on, like, and I got on fire today with Diana.
Sorry. You did what? On car? I'm sure.
He said he cut out for a second, but he said he got thrown into the fire because of me, because I asked him to host my place.
And he's doing it. Rip on, right? That's great. We're doing a very
cool. I do agree that having the raised hands would be nice, because I know, Jeanette and David, you know, did raise hand, and David's hand was up for at least 5 or 10 minutes. I was watching his hand. I was counting the clock, and I didn't know how if I should interrupt or how that procedure would work. So,
I tried to explain that we were doing that, but I think people didn't.
Yeah.
You know, it's what people have gotten used to. So thank you for doing that, because you were noticing it, you know?
Yeah, seriously, thank you. And I realized too, Sharon, when you and Jeanette had discussed that was kind of my bad. I feel like I definitely should have said something during my spiel about muting, that we were going to try something different. It just completely slipped my mind, so I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay.
You don't have to feel that bad. I wasn't really holding my hand up all that time.
No, but, you know, strong guy, you know.
Yes.
My thing is that, you know, when we raise up our hands, we have something on our mind. And if we're waiting for 10, 20 minutes, whatever, it kind of slips, you know. I'm always like that, too. I'm waiting my turn, and eventually I forget what I want to say in the first place. And when they call my name, it's like, sorry, I forgot. Now I'll come back.
Well, part of it sometimes when I do it is sort of cheating, because if I put it up early, I know I'll be one of the first people. If it's a large group,
I do that too.
You think we're the 8th or the 10th, and it's like, well, if I put myself up early, even before I think of something, well, I can always put it down, you know.
Yeah. We found out your secret.
I actually did have my question when I did raise it, but anyway, no problem.
Hey, we haven't heard from Elizabeth Ann. Do you have anything that you wanted to add? Are you still on?
She is here, actually. But let me audio that one.
Hi, I am on, but while I was muted, a phone call came in, so I didn't know what you all were talking about.
Oh, okay. We've been talking about what we want to do with Third Thursday. Do we want to have some months where we just chat and not have a topic? And we also were talking about, do we want to always have raised hands with a host, or do we want to have sometimes when we don't? And I think what people are saying is, when we have a speaker, it would be good to have the raised hands, you know, like an outside speaker.
Yeah. Yep.
And then when it's just a few of us, to be a little more informal and, you know, and go with that.
Well, I agree. I don't have any objections to those. I think every so often on a Thursday, we can just have a low-key social, you know, discussion about any and everything. That should be fun on a Thursday.
Yeah, right.
Here's my thing, too. I mean, I've been to a few of these things with different orgs, you know, doing just, you know, Friday night social or whatever. That would be either work or personal. I mean, I don't know everyone's, but my personal thing is during the weekday, right? Personally, like, I don't know who works and who doesn't work, but like, after work, I kind of want to shut the computer down kind of deal, right? So I don't know how people feel about that too, right? So if you have individuals who on your org who are working on during the week, you know, you're kind of cutting out that demographic.
Well, it's so hard to do stuff on a Friday or Saturday night.
Yeah, we kind of, once you get into the weekend, it can be more dicey.
Really tough. And we have a pretty consistent group. You know, it goes up and down. And the beauty of it, I guess, is that people can't, you know, come or they don't. Or sometimes people come and have to leave, you know, whatever.
Fair.
There's no perfect time.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
People can come and go as they please, you know, as I understand that you have, like, people work through the week and they're tired. They don't want to be, you know, bothering any technology. But even if they drop in, like, for 15, 20 minutes and just have a little chat and then leave.
That's right. Like visiting Cheers, stop in for a drink and leave.
I used some wine cocktails, Mary.
Yeah, right. How about mocktails? A virtual drink, you know?
Yeah, right. A virtual drink on you.
I did want to say, though,
make that happen. You know, with physics. I mean, with images and voiceovers. You know, we can just have like the audio of the drinks being poured.
Is gonna be I think the basic. The next time I go out, I'm gonna definitely try the drink that Jennifer had over in DC, the blueberry. What was it, Jennifer?
Blackberry margarita.
That's yummy.
It had one that was 54 ounces.
Oh, my gosh. So much for the rally if you had that one.
It'd
be in your bed.
I did want to just add, I feel that same pain of an evening weekday event, and not that this is bad, but I am wondering, there may be people not joining because of the day or time or both, so it might also be... you know, if we're feeling a need for, let's try a second meeting time that might bring together other people, like who typically this time or day might not be ideal for. Like, you know, you've got a group size, but what we don't know is who isn't here because it doesn't work for them.
Yeah. You know, honestly, it's difficult to, it's surprising the work that goes into organizing it.
Yes, I'm sure.
So when you say, I mean, what you say makes perfect sense. Somebody else would have to take that on, because I don't think I could do both.
You know, I say that, maybe try a different day and time. But, you know, whatever you try, it is or isn't going to work.
Exactly right.
It's hard to get that even balance. So
maybe a Saturday afternoon or something.
Yeah, I think there's no harm in trying it.
Yeah.
Maybe like once or twice, just to test the waters.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I would agree, but also, you know, consider, you know, maybe doing a poll, right? Having data on your, you know, and kind of seeing what the trends are and what people are thinking.
People would.
Very important too.
I mean, like some people want Saturday afternoon for errands, you know?
Right.
I feel like it's survey.
A survey kind of
actually that's a good brilliant idea. Yeah.
Sorry, it's my data driven mind.
I'm glad
you're confiding with the but
everything at work is data driven, so it's how
so Ankar, are you volunteering to make the survey?
Well, unfortunately I cannot because I'm not a member of Bay State. So
okay, you want to form? I can Apple cash you $15 to join right now.
You're a member of ACB. After,
that's good enough.
You're part of the family, like it or not.
I think I'm still a member of ACB in the whole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Sharon, I have a question. It's actually for Jennifer. Because I unfortunately had a phone call in the middle of this presentation, so I missed a lot of what you were saying. But I wanted to say thank you to you as well as to Nick for you know, taking the time out and going to the leadership conference. And we had heard before at the start of the conference that there was an issue with guide dogs. There's like a flu going around. Yeah. Impacting guide dogs. And I know you're a guide dog user. Did you take your guide dog with you?
So I did not. And she ended up with her own stomach bug that wouldn't have been pleasant to bring to the various places I was going to be. So I didn't bring her, but that was the other reason that I just thought, you know what? I don't mind opportunities to practice using my cane. And I actually find the cane to be more useful in a new environment that's indoors, like a hotel.
Okay.
And I had, you know, my daughter, my husband at home, who she hung out with. So anything about there were a few dogs there. I don't know how many people did not bring their dogs. That was something. When I saw that, I thought, oh gosh, do I want to take a chance?
Especially did anybody have problems that you heard?
Well, not that I heard of, so we'll knock on wood that
you know, none of the dogs there, but I think there were few enough that there probably wasn't the amount of contact.
Yeah, scary.
I went to conventions now without my dog because I went to a convention in Connecticut and I accidentally, my dog got out of her harness in the Uber on the way to work and the driver couldn't get it back to me in time for me to catch my flight or my bus. So finally, I had a cane in my office, a cane in my backpack, and I dumped the dog food out of the suitcase, and someone at work drove her home.
Oh, wow.
All things happen.
Now, I guess, wow.
Nona, Jennifer was saying that there were some dog refusals by Uber, however.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Canada is surprised. Yeah. Yeah.
That is my one reason why I haven't gotten to the guide dog yet, at least one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always concerned about that when I was working Fawn too. I mean, in general, I just, me personally, don't really feel comfortable getting into an Uber alone as a woman. But, you know, then when I had her, it was like, well, I'm probably going to get refused access. And I was in the presence of people who were refused access because of their guide dog. And it's just so frustrating to like be a bystander to that and like not be able to really like do anything.
Yeah.
It
happens so often.
You know, up until last year, you know, like, I mean, I could see the benefits of like, having a guide dog, right? But like up until last year, you know, I lived at home and I've been here, you know, about a year now on my own here. And it's just, you know, I feel that, you know, having a guide dog would be beneficial. But at the same time, you know, living in DC or, you know, Ireland or whatever, like, I feel like this is the capital of refusals. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it just kind of depends on where you are, though, because there are a lot that happen in the Boston area.
Yes, there are.
But they can happen anywhere.
I haven't had that many, but it is hard when it happens. It's... So it just kind of sucks. You're standing there. It could be raining. You want to get somewhere on time.
We're losing you, Jennifer, a little bit.
Can you... Oh, sorry. I'm leaning on my microphone part of my headset.
There you go.
To me, the benefits of having a dog far outweigh the occasional refusal. And you just start developing a method. If I know I have to be at work on time, I request it 15 minutes earlier that I might actually want to leave, you know, to build in a buffer. Yeah. I now do a screenshot of every, when I get the driver's name, you do a screenshot so you have the info. And, you know, it's those kind of things. But it can kind of put a real downer on a day. I mean, I had a time when my daughters were with me. We'd gone to the women's rally in Cambridge and felt really great, you know, bringing them to that. Mm-hmm. They really enjoyed it. So then the, you know, Uber driver pulls up. My daughter clearly saw him look at the dog and leave. And I'm like, oh, my kids had to experience that. Like, they understand the discrimination and they understand how people might think about blindness or a guide dog. But just my heart was like, oh, you know.